We know that you are a member of the Ukrainian Parliament. First of all, could you tell us what brought you here at perhaps February, where you had been staying in Washington, and what was your mission in U.S. Capitol?
So I came 10 days before the invasion happened. I decided I can just come a little bit earlier to see my husband. He's a Ukrainian. He works in the United States, in Austin, Texas. And so I came 10 days before the invasion, and I was already 8.5 months pregnant back then. And I remember the first day of war, when it was early morning in Ukraine, when Putin invaded. I turned around to my husband. I'm like, well, I have to be in Washington. I mean, all I can do here is just go to rallies and protest. And in Washington, being a member of the parliament, I can go and talk to my colleagues, to my counterparts in Congress, and raise support, raise awareness about what's going on and what actually needs to be done to help my country. And I remember that was not a session week, so there was almost nobody there. So I had meetings with the staffers, trying to brief them and to explain what's actually going on. And to be honest, the first probably 48 hours was difficult because nobody in the world believed Ukraine will not surrender. Everybody thought we would be kept, we would go down, and that Kyiv would be captured by Russians and occupied by Russians within the 24 or 48 hours. It did change in about 4 or 5 days when Ukrainians showed their resistance. When people watched 24/7 on TVs how Ukrainians were literally fighting barehanded, stopping tanks and the armed vehicles on the streets, how we had tens of thousands of people standing in lines to sign up for the army because we had no place to run. It was our country that was invaded. And comparing to, I don't know, when we are being compared to other countries, I keep telling them, well, you know, in other countries, the government, the president, and the parliament are the first to leave the country and to do something in exile. In Ukraine, everybody stayed and everybody picked up arms. So I started going around on the Hill, knocking at every door and asking for every meeting with every with the senators, with the congressmen and congresswomen. And basically, the agenda was very simple. We need a no-fly zone. If you do not want to do the no-fly zone, give us the guns. Give us the air defense systems and the jets so we can create our own no-fly zone for us. Because we know how to fight, and we had proved we know how to fight. We literally beat up the second biggest army in the world and are taking it back now. The second thing besides the no-fly zone and the defense system was sanctions. Because I remember when the first package of sanctions came out, the same day the Russian stock exchange rose, which means they expected worse. And first, I couldn't understand what was going on. And then when I saw the exemptions on oil and gas that the Treasury did through the licensing, I realized that nobody wants to go for strong sanctions and actually do hurt the economy. So we started pushing this agenda. We started pushing the agenda on personal sanctions on Putin's cronies and his close oligarchs. And that was the main thing I kept asking the Congress people to help us with, because we saw a very great support, an awesome support from the American public, from the American people. And that's what the United States is about. And that's basically what the United States has been standing for in the rest of the world. And now here, a small country like Ukraine, comparing to the United States, is doing what actually the United States was promoting to be doing, fighting for the democracy and independence of Europe, of the world, against one of the biggest countries in the world, like Russia.
What are the responses you got from members from both aisle, and any major accomplishments?
Well, I've met probably around 50 congressmen, senators, congresswomen. And to be honest, I've never seen such a bipartisan support on any issue before as I've seen it now for Ukraine, both on Democratic and on the Republican side. What I was really impressed with, they had a very good understanding on what was going on. And that was very surprising for me. And that was very nice because they live, what, 10,000 miles from Ukraine, and they still know what was going on. And unfortunately, I saw the Congress being one of the leaders in this. But when it came to the executive branch, we saw it kind of slow down there. So we did have the support coming, and we do have the arms and the humanitarian aid coming. But it's not in the quantities that we need, because, again, we're fighting the second biggest army in the world, which is a few times bigger than we are. And we need it faster. I understand that nobody was ready for this war. I mean, everybody knew there would be war coming, but nobody expected it would be that bad. Nobody expected that Putin would become literally a war criminal. And I understand that decisions comparing to what they're usually, how they're usually like made, are being done fast. But comparing to what needs to be done, it has to be done much faster. Because when I keep seeing people saying we're negotiating the air defense systems or the MiGs, I understand that every day of negotiations is thousands of lives of Ukrainians, of children, of women, of innocent people who are sitting there in the basement, literally begging to get at least any support, because this is the matter of life for them. And it's not about an escalation, because the US and NATO keeps talking about, we don't want to escalate. Well, with Putin, if he has made his mind to do something, he doesn't need a reason or an excuse for that. He doesn't need an escalation. Like, we did not do anything and we were still invaded. We were just called Nazis. So this is the problem that the world keeps trying to negotiate Putin, to talk to him as a rational person while he's not. It's about what he wants to do and what he doesn't want to do. It's not the world, the democratic world, telling Vladimir Putin what is the red line for him to cross, for the world to be strong against him, to do something. It's Vladimir Putin telling the rest of the world that if you do this, this is going to be an escalation, and they step back. If you do this, this is going to be an escalation, and they're stepping back. That's why I kept telling them, where is your red line? Because Putin is the one who is drawing the red lines for you.
How would you evaluate the help that the U.S. government provides to Ukraine so far? And how was President Biden's stance towards Putin, in your opinion? Biden's 9 words about Putin, "For God's sake, the man cannot remain in power." How do you like it? Are you seeing any possibility of regime change in Moscow?
You know, I like actions, not words and statements. I'm grateful for these words. This is something that had to be said, but unfortunately, it's not that easy just to get rid of Putin. He's not a democratic ruler, and unfortunately, Russians are not democratic people. We've already seen 71% of Russians support the war in Ukraine. And since the war started, he's getting more and more support to kill Ukrainians because they're, I don't know, Nazis. And it's not about Putin. It's about, unfortunately, the common support of this evil and these actions towards other people. And the best thing that could have been done is not saying that Putin has to resign, but giving us the weapons to stop these massive killings and defeat Russians. The best would be to do the personal sanctions, and still I can see the fear here towards Vladimir Putin. And unless we don't get rid of this fear, it's going to be very difficult to defeat this man.
How do you evaluate China's position in Ukraine crisis? China is still yet to condemn Russia's invasion. Do you think it's good for China to be like this in the struggle between evil and good? Is it possible to be impartial?
Well, China is trying to play its own game now and to take all the advantages it can out of this war. But if you see the voting of China, they are always the ones who support Putin. So they are trying to play this game, trying to be somewhere in the middle because they don't know where it's going to end up. And on one side, I think it is they're trying to keep their good relationship with Russia. On the other side, they understand that weakening Russia is making China stronger. Geopolitically, this war is good for them. There is only one big negative thing about this war for China is Ukraine has been exporting a lot of food to China. And this will be a main issue in probably half a year when the crops will not be coming. And it's going to be a huge problem for the world, not even for not only for China. But China has been very dependent on the Ukrainian food and crops. So, of course, I would want China to step up for democracy and say that we support people who are literally being shot to death on the streets and killed fighting for their freedom. But I understand that China has their own game and they're trying to play a good cop with both Putin and trying to save their face, not showing the direct support and not saying that we are in favor of it.
How do you compare Xi Jinping with Putin? Will Xi Jinping and his China pose an even bigger threat to the peace and prosperity of the world?
If you compare Putin, well, Putin cannot be compared. You can compare Putin with Hitler only. And I don't want to compare anybody else with him because he is a massive murderer. He is a war criminal. And this is something that he has been doing for decades, for years in Georgia, in Moldova, in Syria, when they burned Aleppo to ashes. That's what they're doing in Ukraine now. Exactly the same what they did in Syria. And that's because the world let them do that. I haven't seen China doing that. China is very smart. They're playing more economically. They're playing more strategically.
Your baby girl is expected in middle April. You joked about naming your baby Javelin. Will it be like this or you got a name for the baby already? How would you explain what have happened over the past month to your baby girl when she asks you in the future?
Well, she's definitely going to be a fighter, I hope, because she made it to every meeting and to every cabinet on the hill that I've been to. And she even helped me probably because it was very difficult to say no to a pregnant woman when she was asking for help for her country and her countrymen. Yeah, I've been telling, so we don't have a name yet. It's 9 days left and we still didn't come up with a name. And I've been telling my husband we should name her Javelin because Javelin is one of the most common weapons now in Ukraine to fight against the tanks and the armed vehicle. And I was telling my husband we need more of those in Ukraine. So we need to name her like that. And it's been very popular in Ukraine recently. But unfortunately, they just started naming pets and animals that were born in the zoo. They're naming them now Javelin, Bayraktar, which is one of the best drones that we have in our army now, shooting the tanks as well. So my husband keeps telling me, like, we cannot do that. We cannot name our baby just like the animal or a weapon. And I keep telling him, well, we can always then explain her what this name means. She will be proud that she is a Ukrainian, even born in the United States. So I think she will be proud of her country. And I hope by the time she can speak and understand what's going on, she will have home to come back to, a place to come back to. And it's not something I will be telling her, showing the old pictures. Well, it is going to be different because we literally have no, some of the cities are not there anymore, but we can rebuild. But I can always tell her a story of how she was helping me get more support for Ukraine. back then when the war was starting.
She would be born as American as well. Would she be happy about what her government has been doing so far? And could you also tell us what are your goals next? Any expectations going back to Ukraine in the near future?
So she's not going to be an American because we don't have dual citizenship in Ukraine. Well, it's going to be whether American or Ukrainian, and I want her to be Ukrainian. If we're talking about the government, and I will tell her the stories, how her president was nominated for the peace, how he was on the first pages of all magazines in the world, and how he had more support of American people than the president of the United States or any other country. He is the number one politician in the world now, fighting with his people. And I think she would be proud of that. She will be proud of that. Because now I don't think there is a person whom you have to explain where Ukraine is or who Ukrainians are. Because even a few years ago when I said Ukraine, everybody was like, oh, this is somewhere in Russia. Is it a part of Russia? It's not far from Russia. Well, thanks God, nobody's going to ask my baby the same question anymore. And she can proudly say that, yes, I'm a Ukrainian. I'm sorry. I don't know when we are going to come back home. I have my tickets for June 1st. I know there's no airports left besides one that is not functioning in Ukraine. I don't know how safe it's going to be in a month and a half. In 2 months, actually. To go back with the baby. But I hope we're going to manage it. Hopefully by the time it's time to go home, there will be no more Putin and the war will stop and it will be much easier. I don't care about flying to any other country and driving. It's just about defeating this evil, killing us every day.